Zion. Aldrich, sí. Otro triple. 4 de 4. 4 de 4 para Zion.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch, a New Orleans Pelicans podcast powered by NOLA.com. Jeff, we both got sleep in our eyes. We both got coffees going. We're very tired, but I'm pretty pumped up. I don't know about you. We're fresh off Zion Williamson's NBA debut. It was pretty quiet through three quarters. I had my whole story written. And then Mount Zion erupted in the fourth quarter with 17 straight points. You know, there was so much hype to that debut, and it lived up to the hype incredibly.
Yeah, it was like an avalanche. You know, the second it started, you couldn't get it stopped. And you know, so I'm Jeff Nowak. I'm our digital sports producer here at NOLA.com. I'm with Christian Clark, who's our Pelicans beat writer. He's so tired he forgot to tell you who he was. You can hit him up at CClark3000 on Twitter. I'm at Jeff_Nowak. But yeah, I mean, even the building, the atmosphere, there was a lot of people in there. That's the most people I've seen for a midweek Pelicans game, period. They gave out shirts, which is like a playoff-style move for this team. I can't recall them like giving out shirts in a game that wasn't like an opener or a playoff game. The last two times I remember them giving out shirts was the Game 3 against the Blazers in the playoffs and Game 3 against the Warriors in the playoffs. And it felt like that type of atmosphere when Zion was going. There's a four-minute period where the building was rocking, Zion was rocking, Zion was knocking around a seven-footer in the paint. it was an experience, man.
Yeah, wow. There's a lot to talk about, just, you know, the pregame production, you know, all that went into the debut. But I just want to talk about the 17 points in a row, that stretch specifically. You know, what was incredible about it was Zion did it with the three ball. That's obviously not something that he's known for. The whole stretch started when the Spurs were playing zone defense and Lonzo Ball swings the ball to Zion up at the top of the key. He takes a step back three straight away. It goes in. During that stretch, you know, Zion scored 17 points during 3 minutes and 8 seconds. That's all. That was the entire stretch.
188 seconds.
Now, I don't know if Zion has ever hit 4 3-pointers in a game in his life. He didn't do it at Duke. I look it up. Well, I mean, in his life, did you?
Oh, in his life, like, I don't even know if he's done that in his driveway at home.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he didn't do it at Duke. His best 3-point shooting game as a Blue Devil was 3 of 4 at Wake Forest. I mean, it's incredible for him to come out and do that in his first NBA game. You know, his biggest weakness, and it looked like a strength, at least for one game.
Well, I mean, he only attempted 2 in the entire preseason, and he played in the preseason. It wasn't, you know, he didn't play full minutes because you don't in the preseason. He played 20, 25 minutes a game, but I mean, his last one was against the Spurs, and they hit one against them. Maybe he just really likes to shoot against the Spurs. But, yeah, it's remarkable. And, you know, I said before the game, and our deputy sports editor, Randy Kemp, can back me up on this. I should have tweeted it so I could, you know, have some clout there. But, you know, I said there was two things I expected. One was I expected him to play limited minutes. Obviously, that wasn't a surprise. You know, I thought he was going to be in the 16-minute range, and that's what, you know, I think there was a four-minute cycle going on. He went into the fourth quarter with 11 minutes and 30 seconds played. So I thought that there was an idea there that in my head that 11 minutes of 40 seconds, slightly under 12. And I thought, you know, that was intentional so that if they got into a situation where he got rolling a bit, they could stretch it out. And I think probably 18 was above what they wanted. But and the other thing I said was, you know, he's been hurt for so long. He hasn't been able to work for a long time. And all he's really been doing for most of that time is sitting there and taking set shots and putting the ball up. And I was talking to Raina. I said, I think you're going to see him, you know, take a few more shots than you're expecting and look a little more confident than you're expecting. Because, you know, if there's anything he probably felt good about going into that game, was the shot that he's worked on more than he's probably ever worked in his entire life. And he said that in the post game, basically, which was, he was like, you know, I've just been sitting there shooting. It's, I guess it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't quite have that trademark explosion. I don't think that's anything to be concerned about. It, to me, it just looked like a guy who hasn't played in a competitive game in 3 months. But, yeah, he compensated for it with the long ball. You know, as far as the Pelicans' plan to kind of ease him back in, they decided to play him in what they called short burst. Zion was basically out there at the start of each quarter. He played four separate stints, 18 minutes total. The fourth one lasted the longest. It lasted 6 minutes and 37 seconds. Alvin Gentry didn't want to sub him out. Like, Alvin Gentry said after the game that he wasn't taking him out of the game until the Pelicans' medical staff basically forced him to. He even kind of joked that, I don't think Sean Payton is taking Drew Brees out in that situation. but, you know, he kind of really had no choice.
He was frustrated about it, too. Yeah, I mean, he knew he was going to get those questions, and he basically, like, before he opened it up to the media, he was just like, he couldn't stay in. That's it. Like, I didn't have the option. So you're going to ask questions, that's the answer. And I think that was part of trying to avoid the national spotlight for this game specifically. Or, you know, maybe they didn't try to avoid it, but they didn't seek it out. And I think that part of that narrative of, like, this is a very real possibility, they're in the game and he has to come out, is, like, something that I think that the Pelicans were aware of, and they were not looking forward to, you know, all the pomp and circumstance of an ESPN game as they tried to figure out what's best for Zion. And the narrative around that, especially for people who might not be paying as close attention and hearing, yeah, he's not going to play a ton of minutes. You're going to get that reaction on Twitter, like, wow, I can't believe he benched him. It's like, he didn't bench him. Yeah. That's not his decision.
No, it's not accurate to call it a benching. I mean, I think, you know, the Pelicans say that they aren't putting him on a minutes restriction. I think that's kind of a point of contention. You know, I've heard a couple of things like, oh, well, we didn't want him to go past X amount of minutes in the fourth quarter. I think, you know, really what they're looking at is signs of fatigue, because when you are physically fatigued, the rate at which injuries can occur goes up a lot. I mean, you're much more likely to get injured when you are tired. So I think that's what they were looking at, was, does he look winded? I think that, yes, he did. They're midway through the fourth quarter, I think he definitely looked tired, which, again, is perfectly understandable. I mean, there's just no substitute playing in NBA games. It just stinks. I mean, I get why they did it. It probably was, you know, the smart move long term, but I think the Pelicans probably win that game if Zion's allowed to go a little bit longer.
So, you know, when his run kind of started, which I actually consider that run to have started a little earlier than most. Like, a lot of people are saying it's 17 minutes and 3 minutes and 8 seconds. But I'm 17 points in 3 minutes and 8 seconds. He actually had 2 assists leading up to that run. So he accounted for 21 consecutive Pelicans points, either assisted or scored, in a little over 4 minutes. And the first one came on a play that I actually view as, you know, his best play of the game in terms of defense to offense, athleticism to skill, which is, I can't remember who took the shot. He didn't box out Jakob Poeltl. He made a mistake there. He let him get slipped by him to the basket. But Jakob Poeltl, a 7-footer who is tough to move around, Zion comes up, just puts both feet in the ground and just leaps like you're used to seeing him do. He has explosion. He goes up. He gets the rebound over a guy that probably in 90% of situations is going to score a dunk or get fouled. And he gets the rebound clean, knocks Jakob Poeltl to the baseline. He looks like he got hit by a truck. He has no idea what happened. And it was not a foul. He went straight up and he got to the ball. And then Zion turns around, leads the break, hits Etuan Moore for an easy two. And if you look at the replay, he was actually up the floor fast enough that he moves Derek White out of the way. And he's standing there ready for a putback dunk if it comes off the rim. That's the type of two-way impact that you really expected, and it's nice to see that. And that keyed that off, I think, when he left the game. So they actually took the lead 107-106 when he left the game after that free throw, which reminded me of, you know, prep school where you intentionally miss the second free throw because you know they're going to sub you out. He didn't do that. He made it. They were down 109-108 when he came out of the game. So, yeah, I think that the momentum was there. It was tough to see a way that the Spurs couched that if he's able to stay in.
It was so funny watching the start of that game. Classic Greg Popovich, the Spurs double-team Zion every time he touches the ball. You know, that was just classic Greg Popovich. Like, nope, we're just not going to let you, you know, beat us at least early on. We're going to make you be a playmaker. You know, I thought it was a little uneven at first. I mean, Zion did have 5 turnovers in this game. Thought the Pelicans' spacing was clunky at times. He had a couple nice passes. He found Ingram for a pretty sweet feed in the first half that Ingram finished there for a dunk. But, yeah, they wanted Zion to beat them as a playmaker at first. And then, you know, later on, I think they were even in a 2-3 zone when Zion hit that first three. They clearly were trying to make him beat him as a shooter. I mean, they didn't guard him at all, and Zion made them pay. But we should have known that Greg Popovich would have done something like that. Just classic Pop.
It was funny to see, and it did almost seem like he was ready for it, because the first four times he touched the ball, he knew the double team was coming, and he moved it, right? Which is nice. It's good to see. You want to see him be a little more aggressive, and I think that he got that, you know, as the game progressed. I thought he looked actually more physically fit in the second half than he did in the first. From my perspective of, like, playing basketball and having to work your way into a game, I think that it probably was, like, physically really difficult for him to get going and get up and down the floor the first couple possessions, because that's just something you can't prepare for until you're playing and have that, you know, have the adrenaline and have your heart beating, and which you just can't simulate.
Yeah, there's no simulation for game speed. You know, Zion is a very, like, easygoing guy. He jokes a lot. Like, it was funny watching him on the podium yesterday with Jrue Holiday. He's kind of a ham. Like, Jrue said, they did their postgame together, and Jrue was like, oh, what he did tonight was very elite. And Zion had, like, this huge grin on his face. He was looking right at Jrue, and he was, like, nodding his head as if to say, like, yeah, that was very elite. The one thing that kind of irks Zion that I've noticed is the perception that all he can do is dunk. That's probably the biggest thing. He even said that on JJ Redick's podcast. You know, this game, and I think we're going to see going forward, when you watch him closely, Zion can do a lot more than dunk. Now, I wouldn't expect him to hit four threes every game, but I do think he can pass the ball. I mean, obviously, I think he's a very good rebounder. I think he can impact the game defensively. And what I think the Pelicans are going to encourage him to do is, when you get a rebound, like, go ahead and push on the break. They want to play up and down, obviously, and I think you're going to see a lot of, like, Zion coast to coast as the season goes on.
Who's stopping that guy? Who's taking the charge? Like, even if you're in defensive position to take a charge, that's a business decision at that point. You know, it's like, you might get the foul, but you're going to feel it. You know, it's not like you're standing in front of Lonzo Ball. You know, you're standing in front of a guy who is basically an NFL linebacker.
You got to be brave to get in his way.
Just he's incredible, and then and he has the body control that, you know, if you sell out, he can, you know, he had his first shot of the game, he avoided a charge, and it was, you know, kind of that vintage, like, floating in the air and just extending and putting it up, and he needs to work back and get that touch around the rim. It was one of those shots that, you know, as he goes forward, he'll make that shot, and he's going to drive defenses insane because they think they're in position, but he just has the explosion and the body control that he's going to end up in a spot that you are not prepared for him to be. The other thing that I thought was, you know, I think if this is his fourth, fifth game back and there's a minutes cap and he's hit it and he's on a crazy run that you're just like, if we leave him in, we're going to win this game. If we take him out, it might be 50-50, right? I think you're going to see a much different scenario. There was no way in his first game back after 44 games out after a knee scare, they're not taking any risks just because there might be an 8 seed on the line. This is much bigger than that. And even he said he was frustrated. His quote after the game was like, I'm 19 years old. I wasn't worried about longevity. I was worried about that game. And I get that. And the fans are in that same boat. They're not worried about longevity. They're worried about the game that they're at. And I understand the frustration, but it's so much bigger than that.
Yeah, that was such an interesting moment when Alvin Gentry called timeout with 5:23 to go. You know, Zion has scored 17 in a row. The building, I mean, the roof is just about to come off. That was an insane atmosphere. And Zion and Gentry are kind of having this conversation away from the Pelicans huddle near the bench. And it lasted 10 or 15 seconds. And you know, I asked him after the game, and you just knew what it was. It was Gentry saying, hey, man, I know you're cooking right now, but I have to take you out. Like, I have no choice. The medical staff people are in my ear saying, this is it. We're thinking about your long-term future. And you kind of saw Zion protesting a little bit. He tried to stay in the game, but, I mean, the medical people just were not going to let it happen. I'm not going to pretend I'm a doctor. There are a lot of Twitter doctors out there.
It's amazing.
So I'm not going to pretend I know more than them.
They hand out degrees really easily on Twitter University.
Yeah, I would have loved to see Zion finish that game, but I'm not going to say Pelicans medical people made the wrong decision. I guess, you know, you have to look long-term with, you know, a player like this. I mean, a guy like this doesn't come around very often. You can't mess this up.
You need to keep in perspective, too. Like, if that game starts, he plays 30 seconds, and, you know, he lands weird, and he comes off the floor saying, yeah, my, you know, my knee's sore. He's out of that game. You don't even get to the fourth quarter. Like, the fact that he got to the fourth quarter is incredibly positive. And, like, at that point, you're just saying, get out of here without any issues. And then we can go to the next step. I don't know if that minutes restriction at what I think it was at 16 minutes. I think they stretched it to 18. Because I don't think you play 4 minutes per quarter, and then suddenly in the fourth you bump it up naturally. I think that just happened. So I think 16 was where they're at. I think eventually you move to the 20, 24-minute range, and you go from there. And I think if that was in the 24-minute range, probably win that game. And so you just, you know, you got to be patient. You got big games coming up. You got the Celtics. You got the Nuggets on Friday. Like, these are all games that you're going to see him in and you're going to get excited about. And there's a lot more to look forward to with him.
You know, it's particularly interesting that they just decided, oh yeah, we're going to throw him in the starting lineup from you know, his first game in. You know, I thought that was going to be an interesting decision, you know, whether to bring him off the bench and maybe he can play at the end of the game. They just went ahead and did it. And, you know, I thought there was a lack of spacing at times. I mean, it's the first game back, whatever. But I think as we go along, this Lonzo Ball, Jrue Holiday, Brandon Ingram, Zion, and Derek Favors fivesome is going to be really fun. I mean, it's a little short on shooting, but, like, it's so athletic. I think it's going to play so fast and be so good in the open court that it's going to be awesome as we get a couple games into this thing.
Yeah, the narrative around it was interesting because I think that they were trying to take some of the pressure off by having it be a midweek game, not national television. The local fans are going to be there. They're going to come out big. But there's a lot more pressure to put him in the starting lineup when the game's on ESPN on national television. And even if they don't really care about that, it would have rung weird if this huge game is being pumped up on ESPN and then they have to wait until the 6-minute mark of the first quarter to see him, and then he's only playing 16 minutes and whatever. But, and I think that affected a lot of that game. The crowd was kind of flat at times, even though there were so many people, because a lot of them were there for a specific reason, and they had basic, and they got that. They got what they were there for. It just, they had to wait for it. And it seemed like the team came out a little flat. I think they were fortunate to be in that game at all. And at one point in the third quarter, the only player who had a positive plus minus was Derek Favors, and he was plus one. Every other player on the team had a negative rating. They were only down by 10 points at that time. Like, they didn't hit a three-pointer until like midway through the second quarter. And this is a team that's setting records for three-pointers made this season. So I think it just, they came out a little flat. I think it's always a risk that you run when there's so much going around the game that's not the game. And I think you saw that in the first half. But you also saw, like, the dynamism that can come in stretches when you do have him really going.
Yeah, I mean, that was a shame. You're coming off a game on Monday where you hit 21 three-pointers and then you miss 11 of the first 12 threes you take. You can't buy one through the first three quarters. Fourth quarter, different story, obviously. But let's take a quick break on Birdwatch. We'll be right back with more Zion talk. Back here on Birdwatch, a New Orleans Pelicans podcast powered by NOLA.com. We are on Apple. We are on Spotify. Mash that subscribe button. Give us a 5-star review. Tweet us with questions, feedback. Jeff, I got a question for you. Do you think a player has ever got MVP chance in his first NBA game?
No.
I'd probably say not.
They were loud, too. It wasn't like, you know, it was like there was this sheepish, like, do you think we should say it? Like, they were, it was everyone, and it was loud, and it was very funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Zion has scored 16 straight points at this point. He's at the free throw line, you know, midway through the fourth quarter. And we just hear the MVP chants in Smoothie King Center. I kind of looked around. I was like, MVP? That's what we're going with? Right. I thought we'd be going with, like, Zion or something. I mean, yeah. A little premature, but you know what? I like the enthusiasm, I guess.
You can say first NBA game. I'll raise you, you know, first 15 minutes in his NBA career. The most top picks, I mean, if you look at the list of the top scored, he had the 7th most points in his rookie, the debut of any number one overall pick. I came up with the list all the way back to 1947, but the stats back before 77 were bad. Like, they were just random misses. I just had question marks throughout my list. But of the top 15, he played 18 minutes. He scored the seventh most points. The next lowest top pick debut minutes total, if that's too many qualifiers, I'm sorry, was Hakeem Olajuwon had 28. That's the next closest. Zion had 22 points in 18 minutes. He averaged 1.2 points a minute. His per 36 numbers, he would have had 43 points and 14 rebounds. It's like just bananas. And so it was nice to see the fans kind of give him that moment. He smiled about it after the game, even though he was a bit frustrated. I think the cliched line is you have to be upset after a loss, you know, and I think that's fine. You could tell he was struggling with that at times because he's towing that line a little bit, but he's also like, I just crushed it.
Yeah. You know, the strangest part of it all, too, was the fans calling for a curtain call, basically, while Zion is on the bench. You know, medical staff people have, by this point, have decided, no, he's not coming back into the game. It was pretty clear that his night was done. And the Pelicans are out there, like, trying to win a game. And the whole team is just hearing, like, Zion chants.
Yeah. Scott Kushner, our columnist, actually asked Brandon Ingram about the game. We have that clip for you.
Yeah, I don't think I heard the moments of the game. I'm more focused in. I'm trying to knock the free throw down, which I didn't tonight. But I mean, it's a lot of love and support in the building, and we enjoy it.
So, yeah, I mean, he said he didn't hear it, which, you know, I believe him. Whatever, I don't think he would have told you if he did hear it and if it did bother him, you know. I think whatever happened, that's the correct answer. And I think I've been impressed with Brandon Ingram's approach to these type of questions. I think that he handled it very well. But, you know, I don't have any of those need to protect the fans. So, like, I'm going to say, like, I thought it was – to me, it felt icky because it was like – it was very similar to the idea of the Saints fans chanting Teddy when Drew Brees came back. Not these are very different situations, but it was like that same kind of like he's on the bench and you're cheering for him. But that was like you're showing appreciation for Teddy Bridgewater, but you're not, you know, doing it at the expense of someone else. If that happened during a timeout, I would have been fine with it because it would have been kind of a fun little fan experience. Chanting, we want Zion, as Brandon Ingram, guy who's been playing at an all-star level and kept this team relevant, you know, kept this team worth watching at this point of the season, trying to win a game. This is not over. You're not winning this game. You're not out of this game. And he's standing at the free throw line, hearing or not hearing, we want Zion. If that was me, I would be like, the hell?
Trying to win this game.
Yeah, and he missed. He's actually had some struggles at the free throw line lately. He had a really good start to the season, but he missed a few clutch free throws against the Jazz, and he missed 3 out of 4 down the stretch here. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, the chance impacted him at the free throw line. But I think that part of building a culture around a team is understanding how to support the players and how to avoid undermining the players, you know, as fans, right? There's only so much you can ask from a non-coordinated chant in the stands, and it's cool to see it happen at all, but I didn't think that it came off well. I thought it was a bad look in that moment. Even if it was directed at Alvin Gentry, the players on the court are hear what you're yelling, and that's all I'll say about it. I'm getting very preachy, but yeah,
I can't knock the enthusiasm. I mean, I probably wouldn't have done it, but I can't knock the enthusiasm, you know. One of the things that I think is going to be really interesting going forward is how does the team as a whole just deal with, like, Zion mania? I mean, there is just such intense attention and focus on whatever this guy does. Just to kind of put one metric on that, I think the Pelicans issued 160 single-game credentials for that game. They normally issue between 25 and 30 for a typical game. You know, this team is going to be put under the microscope, like, Zion is going to get kind of followed around like he's the Beatles in 1963 or whatever. I mean, that's just kind of the level of attention that he attracts. And I think that I don't want to say it's going to be hard for his teammates not to be resentful or anything, but like that's just the way it is. And I think one of the things that helps is Zion's a very humble dude. Like, he handles all that attention about as well as you can handle it for a 19-year-old. And I think that's going to be important going forward.
Well, he's got that like, ear-to-ear grin going for him every time. You know, like, he's an enjoyable person to sit there and listen to. There's, like, not a drip of arrogance, which is kind of almost bizarre just from someone who has been, like, viewed as this elite guy for so long. It's weird to see him sit up there and just seem, like, genuinely humbled by people heaping praise on him. Like, Drew sat there and just, like, you know, it was very much like you're talking to, you know, your niece or nephew. And just like, he was great. He was great. I had no idea you could shoot like that. I think his quote was like, you've been practicing.
Yeah.
And it was just, that was a neat little moment. And it just, I think that there's very, like, fun energy, a very familial energy to this roster.
Yeah, that was like older brother vibes.
Yeah, exactly.
Was what I got from Drew Holiday's post-game presser when Zion was sitting right next to him. You know, that's kind of what I wrote my big feature on that ran the day of the game, is like, how has Zion managed to stay so well adjusted when, you know, he's been famous since he was 15 years old? And I thought his high school basketball coach, you know, I had some good insight on that. I mean, I think the main thing, and I know this sounds simplistic, like, Zion's primary focus is just winning basketball games. Like, at Duke, when everybody wanted him to pack it in and be like, oh man, save yourself for the NBA, go get your money, sit out the rest of the season after he exploded his shoe, he came back like 5 games later and he's like, I like playing basketball and I wanted to be out and help my team win. I think that's the person that he is. You know, I think he's focused on winning. You know, that's reflected through his play on the court. He's not going to be a guy who's like, give me the ball at the top of the key and clear out. Like, he's willing to, you know, score his points by any means necessary, whether that's cuts or putbacks. We saw some of that last night. So I think that, you know, he's going to continue to deal with the circus that just comes with, you know, him now being in the NBA pretty well. I'm not worried about it at all.
You look at guys like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, and it's easy to forget that they came into the NBA in some of the most trying circumstances you can hit. I mean, they were supposed to be the saviors of the Lakers. They didn't come in with maybe Zion-level expectations, but they went into a market that will chew you up and spit you out. Look at Dwight Howard. And, you know, they struggled at times, but, like, that experience, I think, will speak volumes in terms of, like, how, you know, the team understands what he's going through at the very minimum. Like, they understand that getting those headlines, like, out of your control. I don't know if you saw Lonzo Ball's post-game outfit. It was an experience.
I didn't see it. I was out back there typing.
You had to go type. So the funny thing is you could still hear the answers, but it was, there it is. You could see it there.
Oh, pink jumpsuit.
Yeah, it was like a full, jumpsuit is a good word for it. Yeah, it's got like green, lime green trim, and it was something.
I wonder, those guys had to be alerted that, you know, before the game probably, that, hey, there's a good chance that you're doing your post-game presser from the podium and that, you know, this footage is broadcast on national TV. Those guys know, especially in the playoffs when, like, that footage is aired. Whatever outfit I'm wearing is going to be shown on national TV, so I gotta bring it with
Step
my fit tonight.
No, he did. It was great, and that is worth pointing out that, like, typically they don't do full press conference. Alvin Gentry does his, like, stand up availability after the game, and then most other players are available by, like, you go and you see them in the locker room. So usually they'll have, you know, the opposing coach and maybe a player. Like, Carmelo did his own, like, stand up. But typically, that's not how it goes. So this was another good example of how different this was approached and how different the game it was. But, I mean, Lonzo, I think Lonzo is someone to look to as you kind of, like, see if, okay, can he help Zion in, you know, this quest to not be overwhelmed by media attention, by so many outside forces. And you know, because he's had to deal with that. He had to deal with UCLA. He had to deal with, you know, all, you know, LaVar Ball, obviously, has been a name that you hear about, which you haven't heard about much at all. I was just thinking about the other day since he came here, which has been interesting. That was one of the big things people worried about.
Well, the other thing about Lonzo too is him and Zion have a legitimate connection on the court.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw that in the preseason. You know, Lonzo assisted on so many of Zion's buckets. I think we saw that in doses last night, although, you know, Zion's hot streak, let's be honest, was a lot of him just like, nah, I got this from three-point land. But I think those two guys are going to look really good together. I think their games are well-suited, especially getting out in the break. I mean, that's where Lonzo Ball thrives. You know, that's definitely an area where Zion Williamson can thrive. So I think having Zion back is only going to help Lonzo.
The three-pointers will get the attention for Zion, but, you know, what made that kind of like the extended run that it was, you know, a few really nice passes from Lonzo Ball. And there was one that he just put the ball over the top and got Zion on the block, and he just finished a hammer dunk. And it was like the type of thing that, especially against a team that doesn't have LaMarcus Aldridge to bang down low, you know, not every team is going to have the elite front court presence that the Spurs have in LaMarcus Aldridge. And I think you'll see that. But it should probably be pointed out that Lonzo Ball had an incredible game last night. And it's easy to forget because of how it ended and because the conversation is about Zion. But his stat line, if you want to go through it, you know, he played 39 minutes. He went 4 for 8 from the field for 14 points. So 50% from the field, 3 for 6 from 3. So 50%. He hit 3 of his 4 free throws, which just sweet relief. If he was a 75% free throw shooter, he would be a completely different player. So that's probably the mark you just would die for at this point. He had 12 assists, 8 rebounds, 3 steals. He hit a clutch 3 with about a minute and a half left that put them down 3. They were down 6, obviously. He hit that 3. It keeps them within reach. You know, they couldn't get over the top, but that's a type of shot that it, you know, you expect your stars to make. And he did that, and it's like, I think that was probably his best all-around game when you look back at it, you know, from start to finish. He's had some really good games. He played really well against the Kings. He played really well against the Rockets when he hit 7 threes. But, you know, when you go back and you really look at what Lonzo did throughout the course of the game, you're always going to get that kind of elite perimeter defense. I think that it's really good to see that type of game come in Zion's debut, because one of the things you talked about with Lonzo is, you know, his game is so suited to play, at least offensively with Zion, that you'd hope that you could see him really kind of push up the, especially assists and moving the ball around the perimeter and setting people up, that part of his game with this superstar talent in the lineup.
Yeah, another near triple-double for Lonzo. If you just look at...
Well, you got to wait. With Lonzo, you have to give it at least 24 hours because they might just take 2 rebounds from somebody else and get it.
You know, if you just look at the Pelicans' last 17 games, they're 11-6 since the 13-game losing streak. Alonzo is one of the biggest factors in that turnaround. I mean, probably one of the 3 biggest factors. I tweeted out his splits yesterday, you know, during the stretch, but he's like 4th in passes league-wide and 6th in touches, which are pretty good indicators that the Pelicans' offense and everything they're doing is just flowing through him right now. And they're playing their best basketball of the season. What he's done lately, it's not empty calories at all. You know, I've seen point guards, you know, have rack up triple doubles, and it does feel kind of empty. That's even happened in New Orleans before. That hasn't been the case at all. I mean, what Lonzo's doing these past 17 games or whatever is very meaningful too. I mean, I think, you know, he's proved over this stretch that, yeah, he can be a piece on a winning team. And I'm not going to lie, I had my doubts earlier this season. I mean, it was rough.
So empty calories. So he's basically, like, he's a power bar as opposed to, like, Skittles?
Oh, yeah. A lot of fiber and protein right now.
It holds you over. Yeah, it gets you. It has you feeling full as you head on. But, yeah, in Lonzo's turnaround, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, they're still in playoff contention. You know, you might look back at that loss and say, that hurt, which is why it's frustrating to see a situation where they probably win it if he stays in. And it's the 8 seed you're talking about, and you're not gonna change your plans relative to Zion's health for the 8 seed, you know. But they actually went into that game in really good shape, tiebreaker wise in the standings, and they still are. But you know, they're four games out of the eighth seed now, right?
Yep, four games back of the Spurs.
Four games exactly, which, yeah, the Grizzlies have dropped out because the Grizzlies lost to the Celtics last night. So the Spurs are a half game up. They're one game fewer, so they could, you know, fall back. But the Pelicans, relative to those teams, so you're talking about, you know, the Spurs, the Grizzlies, the Trailblazers, the Suns, and the Timberwolves, and the Kings, all within, you know, crazy finish distance of taking that spot. So the Pelicans, relative to those teams, against the against the Grizzlies, they're 1-0. Against the Blazers, they're 2-0. Against the Timberwolves, they're 1-0. Kings, 1-0. Suns, 1-1. But the Spurs, who are now that team, that veteran team that you'd expect to really hold up down the stretch, they lost the first game of that season series. So they would have to win the next three to get that tiebreaker, which is unlikely.
I think that it's going to come down to the Spurs and the Pelicans for the last playoff spot. I just refuse to count out the Spurs. LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan are not maybe the most fun players to watch, but they do just give you like a baseline of competency. I think it's going to come down to New Orleans and San Antonio. I think that 530 is still giving the Pelicans a 53% chance to make the playoffs. I think that's pretty high. They do have, you know, one of the easiest schedules in the league remaining, but I think it's going to be neck and neck with the Spurs. Like you just said, I mean, the tiebreakers are going to be really important, and that one hurt. I mean, it really did. I mean, that's you know, one of the teams that you're chasing in this playoff push. They would have loved to have that game, but still a very memorable night at Smoothie King Center.
Well, the Spurs are a team that, you know, they're not going to lose. They're not going to have bad losses, right? If you watched that game, you watched how LaMarcus Aldridge was just going after Jackson Hayes, which, you know, he had a rough night. I think he's probably a little bruised. But that's the smart play. That's the team that understands where they're going on offense, and it's going to be a tough gap. Three games versus four, and by being behind in the season series is a big difference. But I still think you come out of that game feeling, like, hopeful.
Oh, absolutely. I think there are a little more than 18,000 people. How many people do you think will say they were there 5 years from now?
All of them. How many people do you think will end up with a shirt? That's the real question. But, no, I mean, yeah, that crowd was about as close to a capacity playoff type crowd that you will ever find at a Pelicans regular season game. And as much as I was annoyed by the We Want Zion chants, I was very impressed with the turnout.
Yeah. Really fun night at Smoothie King Center. Hopefully things can become a little more normal now. I mean, I think there's just going to be a new normal with Zion that we're just going to have to get used to. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice to just go back to a little bit normal now that we've made it through. We have game one already gone, and let's see what this thing looks like, man.
I see that, and I don't. I think that you're going to get a little bit back to normal for the non-marquee games. But I think from here on out, anytime you end up with the Celtics, the Lakers coming to town, you're going to see that again. You're not going to see the debut. You're not going to see the minutes limit criticism. But it's going to be crazy.
Nuggets on Friday, Celtics on Sunday. We will continue to track, monitor, observe Zion and Zion Mania. I think that is all for today on Birdwatch. Appreciate you guys for listening. Tell your friends, subscribe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Peace.